Now, for the rest of the hour, we're going to take a good look at good news. Some good news, for example. New strides made in the war on cancer. You've heard of Gleevec, Arbutox, Bexxar, Rituxan, and they're not the hobbits in the latest Lord of the Rings movie. They are new drugs designed to fight cancer. And unlike the old-style chemotherapy drugs, you know, those drugs that used to attack everything, these new drugs are meant to target only the tumor cells and have far fewer side effects. So for the rest of the hour, we'll take a look at some of the latest additions to the medicine cabinet, targeted cancer therapies. How is the way we fight cancer changing? We'll also take a look at a study reported earlier this week that linked chronic antibiotic use with an increase in breast cancer. What's going on there? So if you'd like to ask a question, give us a call. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. And remember, as always, when we talk about medical topics, we can't diagnose your problem or actually give you advice. It would not be ethical, so please don't let or ask our guests to try to do that. Let me introduce my guest. Dr. Larry Norton is Director of Breast Cancer Programs at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center here in New York. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Norton.
Hi, great pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome. Dr. Brian Druker is the Gerald Wen Chair of Leukemia Research at the Oregon Health Sciences University Cancer Institute and the Howard Hughes Medical Investigator. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Druker.
Thanks, Ira.
Let's talk about these new cancer drugs. What makes them... Let me begin with you, Dr. Druker. What makes them different from the old-style drugs?
Well, it's exactly as you said, Ira. What makes them different is that we're attacking the cancer cells specifically. Chemotherapy, although it has worked, it kills both normal cells as well as the cancer cells, and that accounts for its side effects. These new drugs are based on an understanding of what drives the growth of cancer cells specifically, so it can just target the cancer cells. As an analogy, it would be like taking your car to a mechanic and figuring out exactly what part's broken and just fixing the broken part, and that's it. And these new targeted therapies are going to the root cause of the cancer and shutting down the cancer cells. That's what the future's all about.
The last time you were on the show, you told us about the Gleevec. Give us an update. How is Gleevec doing, or how are the patients on Gleevec doing?
Gleevec is currently in use for one particular type of leukemia called chronic myeloid leukemia. And our latest update is that patients continue to do extremely well. Virtually three-quarters of patients treated with Gleevec have no detectable leukemia except with our most sensitive techniques. And the relapse rate has been extraordinarily low. So patients are continuing to be healthy, happy. I'm now actually seeing some of my patients who are coming back for their five-year follow-ups from our first study. Still taking Gleevec, still doing well, still out enjoying life.
Mm-hmm. Last week, the FDA approved Erbitux, Dr. Norton. Is that a similar drug to Gleevec? Did Martha Stewart sell her stock too quickly?
Well, I won't comment on Martha Stewart. That I won't do. But it's the same and different. And I think there's an underlying important philosophical point to be made. And I think that this is the point. And I'll get back to the specific example that you cited. Is that when I was in medical school and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do specifically in medicine in my life, a lot of my wise mentors said, don't go into cancer medicine because it's going to be impossible to really kill cancer cells with drugs because the cells are so aberrant, they have so many abnormalities at so many different levels that they're not going to have an Achilles heel. They're going to, if you shoot them in one place, they will pop up in another place, and they will therefore be resistant to specific targeted therapy. And I think what we're seeing now is that was one insight, but it wasn't a correct one. In fact, cancer cells can be driven by very discrete abnormalities that can be identified. And even though they are very aberrant and have a lot of changes, they still have an ultimate driving force that can be attacked. Now with Erbitux, what's being attacked is something called the epidermal growth factor receptor, which is, we abbreviated EGFR, which is an extremely important component of many cells throughout the body, and clearly is a very important component of many cancer cells, colon cancer cells in particular in this case, but head and neck cancer, lung cancer, breast cancer, many kinds of cancer cells have abnormalities in that particular pathway. And so the idea of attacking that specific abnormality and getting a benefit, as has been seen leading to this approval, is a very exciting turn of events. Now, that's an antibody that is made outside the body and is introduced to attack this, whereas Gleevec is a molecule that's not an antibody that's designed to change a particular system, and that's a difference as well. But the fundamental philosophical point is that cancer cells are not so aberrant that they don't have an Achilles heel. That is wrong. They do have an Achilles heel. We just have to find it and design molecules to hit those spots.
Mm. Talking about new cancer therapies this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. It's interesting to hear you say that. You think that these cancer drugs are so new and improved that it's like having a whole new arsenal where you're not going to have those terrible side effects.
Well, think about antibiotics. I mean, think about where we were with the treatment of infectious diseases before we had antibiotics. I mean, when I was starting off in medicine, about half the Department of Medicine were experts in infectious diseases because the antibiotics weren't very good. You had people who spent their whole life studying one organ system, like infections of the kidney, pyelonephritis, for example, or lung infections, because a lot of things had to be done, surgical things like drainage, for example, a surgical resection of parts of organs or of whole organs when they were infected. A lot of that was going on because we didn't have effective drugs. Now we have so many effective drugs and developing more that attack specific abnormalities in the bacteria, particularly that cause the disease, that it's fairly easy to treat most infections. And it's become a minor component of medicine relatively compared to the way it used to be because of the efficacy of the drugs.
So you think we're at a watershed, that much of a watershed with these cancer drugs, that where we were with bacteria and antibiotics a few years ago?
That's my personal view, yes.
Hmm. Dr. Drucker, would you agree?
I wouldn't agree entirely. But clearly the first step towards that is that you've got to understand what's driving the growth of every single cancer. And currently we don't have that knowledge for every single cancer, so we still have a lot more research to do. We still have a lot more work to do. But in addition, if you want to extend this this analogy of Dr. Norton's, you also have to take a broad-based approach. When you think about treating infections, it's not all just antibiotics. It's preventative measures, it's vaccinations. And for cancer, we have to take a similar approach. Clearly, we need to understand the drivers of the cancer in every single situation. We also have to think about preventative measures, earlier diagnosis, and also harnessing the power of the immune system. In other words, we take a very broad-based approach, plus expanding our arsenal of these molecular targeted therapies.
Well, Brian, you're not really disagreeing with me. You're just saying this.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing at all. I'm expanding.
There's much more work to be done, and we certainly agree on that.
Absolutely.
Are we going to get to the point where you don't define the cancer for the organ, but by the kind of drug that can treat it? That these may be similar. You know, one drug can treat a lot of different cancers.
No, that's absolutely right. We'll have molecular signatures of each cancer, and here the analogy I'd use is, again, if we go back to our cars that are broken. Do you subtype your car if it's a broken Ford or broken General Motors, or do you break it down by the type of part that's broken? And the same is going to be true of cancer. We're going to subtype them by the type of part that's broken. And so you'll come into the doctor, you may be diagnosed, and you'll have a molecular signature. Part A, B, and C is broken, and we have drugs that target those particular abnormalities. And so it'll be these molecular signatures that will determine what type of treatment you receive, not the type of whether it's breast cancer or colon cancer.
And I must say the analogy to infectious diseases is there as well, because clearly what's important is what is the organism causing the infection rather than what is the part of the body that's infected. I mean, the same antibiotic's going to work if it's a skin infection or a lung infection or a kidney infection. And so that's that knowledge of what makes cancer go and what we can do to affect it is going to lead in that direction as well.
Mm-hmm. And we're now on a new frontier on cancer research, or at
yes.
least the drug research.
Right.
All right, we're going to take a short break and come back and take your questions. We're talking with Dr. Larry Norton, Director of Breast Cancer Programs at Memorial Sloan Kettering, and Dr. Brian Drucker, who is the Geldwin Chair of Leukemia Research at the Oregon Health Sciences University Cancer Institute and a Howard Hughes Medical Investigator. We'll take some of your questions when we get back. Don't go away. We'll be right back. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. A brief program note on Monday's Talk of the Nation. Join host Neil Conan for the next in the series, Who Owns This Issue? This time it focuses on the issue of jobs, how it's playing out in national politics. We're talking this hour about targeted cancer treatments with my guests, Dr. Larry Norton of Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and Dr. Brian Drucker of the Oregon Health Sciences University Cancer Institute. Our number 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Steve in Denver. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Ira.
All right, go ahead.
Doctors. Yes, I had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in the brain. It was removed surgically. I did 2 years worth of chemotherapy. It did not work. I would not do brain radiation because of the effects on the brain. And basically, I was talking about the end with my doctor when I asked him if I could do Rituxan, which had just been approved by the FDA a couple of years ago. And even though it wasn't approved for brain non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, we figured we had nothing to lose. I did it, and 6 months later, I started getting well, and I'm back at work full-time and have had no reoccurrence.
Huh, that sounds terrific. Is that a typical case?
For non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, it is very effective from what I know. I don't know of anybody else that's had it in the brain that did Rituxan.
Right. I mean, there are reasons why it may be difficult to do it, because it's a large molecule that may have trouble getting in, but clearly it's working in this case, and that's really marvelous. Clearly, we can't talk about individual cases here because we don't know all the details, but the fact is that it's a very effective drug, and I think it's widely used now in the treatment of lymphomas because of its efficacy, and it is targeted. We know exactly where it's going. We know exactly what it's doing. So it's part of that general package of very exciting new molecules.
Thanks for calling, and good luck to you. 1-800-989-8255. You know, whenever we talk about the quote-unquote war on cancer, I get a little gun-shy because I've heard so many times, you know, we're in a breakthrough. Since Richard Nixon announced that war, and we keep hearing starts and stops and starts and stops. Why should I believe you this time, Dr. Drucker, that this is going to work so well?
Yes. We're at an incredible time in cancer research. The Genome Project has been completed, and that gives us an entire parts list. Now our task is to figure out how all these parts fit together and which parts are broken in each particular disease so we can design treatments to specifically target those abnormalities. We didn't have that 20 or 30 years ago. We also have certain other technologies which can allow us to identify the abnormalities much more rapidly. What we're not promising, even though there's huge amounts of optimism about the new targeted therapies, we're not promising we will cure cancer by this or that date. We're saying there's still a lot of work to be done, but we're on the right track now. We have examples where specific targeted therapies are working. You just heard from a patient who's had remarkable results from a targeted therapy. I have scores of patients who've been treated with Gleevec who have very similar stories. And so we're starting to see this optimism that we can do it. It's no longer a matter of whether if we can do it. It's simply a matter of when and coming up with the resources to get the job done.
It wasn't clear for a while that Erbitux would be approved because not everyone with colon cancer improved with the drugs. They weren't as clear and as dramatic as they were with Gleevec. Why is that true? What's going on there?
Well, not of course. It's not everybody's going to benefit because there's still more to learn. I mean, there are cancer cells where the epidermal growth factor receptor is critical, and others that have plenty of it. But that there are other molecules that are also critical, and that's part of the work that Brian was alluding to that has to be done to define certain signatures so we know who's going to benefit the most. But it's an opening of a door. It really is a very dramatically different time than it's been in the past, where we have used science but with empirical methods. And here we know what we're doing. It's like trying to classify music if you don't know about the existence of notes written on the paper. Once you have the notes and you understand the code of the notes, you can reproduce the music, you can control the music. If all you have is recordings of different sounds in the air, you have a much more difficult time. And frankly, that's where we've been in biology for most of the history of biology. We've been classifying things because they look the same, or they act the same, or they have the same appearance under the microscope, without knowing the root cause, without having the sheet music for life. And now that we have a much better understanding of DNA and RNA and protein and how all these relate to each other, we're understanding more and more the sheet music of life. We're not all the way there yet, but we're certainly making very rapid progress, and that's why today is an entirely different day than any time in the past. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Norton, how much do these targeted cancer therapies cost to develop? Are they more expensive than your traditional chemotherapy drugs?
I don't know if they're more expensive. They are expensive, but all anti-cancer drugs are expensive to develop. I mean, there's a lot of safeguards. There's a lot of rules of development. There are requirements for clinical trials, which are really very expensive. But then again, we are saving lives. I mean, we're talking about a collection of diseases that, that kills 25% of Americans. I mean, that's mm-hmm. you know, a huge impact. And what we're doing collectively as a society is to try to protect all Americans. We don't know which one is going to get cancer, but we know that, that a quarter of us is going to die of cancer if we don't keep up the work and keep improving the prognosis, diagnosis, and all the other things we've discussed. And so it really is a very important thing. When you figure in the cost of the lives of 25% of Americans, and the cost of developing these drugs really pales in comparison to what we really can accomplish.
What about the other big the big killers like cervical cancer, lung cancer, cancers like this? Are they going to fall to the same kind of treatments?
Well, cervical is not that common, thank goodness, because of a good method of diagnosis, which is pap smears and methods of prevention. That's actually caused by a virus, we now know, too, so that's another very important component. Lung cancer, you know, is so closely related to smoking.
Right.
The best thing we can do is to get people to stop smoking. I mean, tobacco is responsible for a third of all cancers and a third of all deaths throughout the world, in fact, if you consider heart disease and vascular disease. So that's the number one.
Breast cancer?
Breast cancer is, you know, we have a very exciting drug that's developed, actually two targeted therapies. In fact, you know, there and the old one that we don't talk about as targeted therapy, but is very targeted, is attacking the estrogen requirement of breast cancer cells. Many breast cancer cells require estrogen, and we can attack that estrogen receptor that's in the breast cancer cells with drugs like tamoxifen, for example, and now a new class of agents called aromatase inhibitors that could lower the amount of estrogen in the tissues so profoundly that the cancer cells can't survive, and that's very targeted. And then you have trastuzumab, also called Herceptin, that attacks something very common in breast cancer cells called HER2. HER2 is very similar, actually, in biology to the EGFR that we mentioned earlier. And Herceptin is also an antibody, and it has really profound effects. We're studying in a whole variety of new situations, but an awful lot of people have been helped for a very long period of time with that drug as well.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Drucker, there was a report issued earlier this week that linked breast cancer and antibiotic use, and the more antibiotics you use, the higher your risk was. What is your reaction to that?
It's a fascinating study, and the authors were very honest in pointing out that it actually raises more questions than it answers. And they were also honest in pointing out that it didn't clearly show that antibiotics caused breast cancer. It only said that in their study, which is a huge study, combining two large databases, that increased antibiotic use was associated with an increased risk of breast cancer. And so the real questions now are, if that study can be confirmed, is what the mechanism is. Is there something about antibiotic use that predisposes to cancer? Is there, or is it just a marker of people that might have some immune defect that could predispose them to cancer? But you also have to put this article in some sort of perspective. And again, as I said, it did not say that antibiotic use causes cancer. You also have to remember, as what Dr. Norton has said earlier, if you go back 100 years ago, before antibiotics, if you were diagnosed with something like pneumonia, that was a death sentence. Antibiotics have saved countless numbers of lives. Now we're in a phase where we're trying to be a little bit more judicious about the use of antibiotics. It's clear that in some cases antibiotics are overused or overprescribed. What this study tells us is we need to be very careful about the use of antibiotics, and we need to investigate some of the effects that they might have.
Dr. Norton?
Yeah, well, I agree with everything that's been said. And there are other reasons why you can have association. People who see the doctor more often may have a greater tendency to get antibiotics and also may have a greater tendency to be screened for breast cancer and therefore have an increased diagnosis. So a study like this is a very important one for initiating research rather than to draw any firm conclusions. Obviously, the overuse of antibiotics is a great concern to all of us. And that's something that I'm very glad that this study brought out as a discussion point. But somebody who has an infection, I wouldn't want them to not take their antibiotics because they're fearful of any breast cancer association. At the present time, there's just much more to learn.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. We're talking about new advances in cancer research this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. We've got a few minutes left to see if we can take a phone call here. Let's go to Paul in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. My mother passed away a few weeks ago about breast cancer, And it was told that some of the chemotherapy she was doing was very special because she had negative receptors instead of having positive receptors. And do you know if those new chemicals that are new drugs that are coming are will be for general use or target multiple people or only a certain type of patients? And my other question is, beside so those new drugs, is it advisable to do like something radiotherapy or like new radiotherapy?
Good question.
Like Novalis.
Do you need to do radiotherapy with the drugs too? Radiation therapy, Dr. Norton?
Yeah, well, it's a different. It's a different. They do different things. Radiotherapy is very effective at specific parts of the body where you could aim the beams. For example. Women don't necessarily have to have mastectomies anymore if they have breast cancer. You can remove the cancer itself and then use radiation to the rest of the breast to kill any stray cancer cells that may be in that area. And we use radiation for people with metastases to bone, for example, where the cancer involves a particular spot in the bone that may be painful, brain metastases. There's a lot of specific use. I'm very sorry to hear about your mother. I mean, it's clearly, you know, very, very sad story, and it motivates us to work even harder. The receptors you're talking about are the estrogen receptors. I'm pretty confident, and it means that her tumor was not sensitive to these hormone therapies that I mentioned earlier, and that's why they were using chemotherapy in her case. But what we're beginning to learn that the cancer cells that don't require estrogen do seem to require other things, and we can identify what some of those other things are, and we hope we'll be able to make drugs sometime in the future. That will attack those spots as well.
I've got just about a minute left, but I want to answer this question. We heard from a gentleman who had taken one of the drugs and was untreatable before and was cured. Do these drugs allow us to treat late-stage cancers with success where they might have been hopeless before?
That's a good Gleevec question.
Yes, Ryan? And Gleevec has worked quite nicely in advanced phase patients, although over time, many of them have relapsed with the advanced phases. So clearly what we need to do is we need to identify additional targets to add to therapy so we can use combinations to attack cancers at all the abnormalities that are driving their growth.
You mean once they spread, you need something?
Once they're advanced, they typically depend on more than one abnormality. So we need to figure out all the abnormalities to shut them all down to have the most effective therapies.
And the whole idea that we've heard over the years that cancer has no one cancer comes from any one source, it takes multiple sources, is that now not the case, now that we've identified by using our genetic techniques where the sources are, the causes are?
It's a complicated question, but what I believe, I'd like to sort of end with where I started, is that there can be many, many abnormalities in the cancer cell, but that in more cases than we suspected before, there are certain abnormalities that are so important for the survival of that cell that if we could hit that spot, that we could really hurt that cell and we could really kill that cell.
I would agree.
You can have a lot of abnormalities, but you still have a driving force, and you find that out and you could hit it.
All right, gentlemen, we'll have to pick it up next time because we've run out of time. Although this is quite fascinating, and we'll be following this along with you. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Larry Norton, Director of Breast Cancer Programs at Memorial Sloan Kettering. Dr. Brian Druker is the Geldwin Chair of Leukemia Research at the Oregon Health Sciences University Cancer Institute and a Howard Hughes Medical Investigator. Thank you both for joining us, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Our program is produced by Annette Heist, Erica Altman, and Senior Producer Karen Verghoff. Charles Berquist is our director and our web producer. And why don't you surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, where we have Science Friday's Kids Connection curricula we make free, giving out to our teachers who'd like to use Science Friday as a teaching tool. Also, you can download past editions of Science Friday in your Audible player and also listen to them on Real Audio. And you can also leave us email there. I know we went quickly through the drugs, so we talked about them today. If you couldn't copy them down, you can follow our links on our website, which has plenty of links for you to follow after the program. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.